Welcome back. Joining me in this segment, Peter Rupert. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Peter.
Thanks for inviting me, Mark.
Okay. Currently the UCSB Economic Forecast Director. You're an economist, and you were in Cleveland for many years at the bank. What is that?
The Federal Reserve Bank.
Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland.
Yes.
And that's from memory, only because I know we talked about, I think, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Great memory.
What'd you think of the way he handled his departure from Cleveland?
I thought it was terrible.
Me too.
I wouldn't have done that, and I think most people in Cleveland weren't very happy with it. And we'll see.
We'll see. It's just apparently they let him back in. He did some event, and but yeah, if you're going to leave, you just kind of do it quietly and don't let the
like
door
Art
hit
Modell
you.
Art Modell did.
Like who?
Art Modell. He's the one that moved the Browns to become the Baltimore Ravens.
Ooh.
He had to do it in the middle of the night.
So, before we begin to talk about some of these federal tax cuts and capital gains and how that could affect people's decisions to either sell stocks or real estate in 2010 for fear that the rates will go up and what options might be happening. I read this article in the New York Times when I was flying from Florida to California three days ago, August 13th, Friday the 13th I flew.
Yep.
So I thought of calling you to talk about it, but there was some recent changes a month or so ago in the Santa Barbara News Press article. What's happening now with the UCSB economic forecast?
Right. So we have made some changes. As you mentioned, I'm the executive director, and it's being run out of the executive vice chancellor's office, pretty much. Most of the business end will be handled through institutional advancement, and the vice chancellor is basically committed to having the forecast project as part of the university, which is a great thing, and he's kicked in some money for me to be able to bring on a couple of graduate students and an undergrad and have them sort of be doing most of the data work and that. But I'm very excited about what we're going to be doing. We're basically going to be restructuring things a little bit. And, the main idea is to make this project very useful for the business community and the sponsors in particular. And to that end, I hope to be able to make the data very accessible and a very simple way for people to come in and, for example, callers, on your show, they can say, hey, I want to understand the relationship between, unemployment rates and foreclosure rates. And coming to our website, Economic Forecast Project website, I hope by the end of the year, you'll be able to just, in a few clicks, say, hey, I want to look at those things, and I want to look at it for Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and Ventura. And just in a few clicks, you can look at the relationships there and ask questions of the data that hasn't been possible before in a simple way. So that's our plan.
Well, that sounds like a great plan. What is the website again?
It's going to be part of the Economic Forecast Project. So you can just go to, you can just Google, UCSB Economic Forecast Project, and that'll get you there.
Okay. UCSB Economic Forecast Project. Well, we'll look forward to seeing those changes. It sounds like a great plan.
Well, I think so.
Great plan. And we should talk off the air because I have I take some unique approaches to statistics, and I've been doing some things for many years and capturing inventory, and it's something I do that you can never go back,
right?
2, 3, 5 years and capture the inventory on that date.
Yes.
And so maybe I could, share some of that or do some.
That's exactly the kind of thing I'm looking for, Mark, is that, lots of people out there who are in the industries around, they know the data and what's going on much better than someone sitting at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And, I really hope that we'll get some input from them and like yourself to say, hey, I have this data I've been looking at. It'd be great if we could let users look at it and see what's going on. And, with that kind of interchange, I think that, this website and the data will be much more useful to the community. So that's the goal.
And understand, I'm just one, of roughly 1,000 real estate agents here in Santa Barbara,
Barbara
Association of Realtors, and that there's plenty of others who've been doing a lot of things as well. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm the only guy.
No, I understand that. Yeah, that's right.
Particularly the Santa Barbara Association of Realtors. So,
right.
Okay, so I'm. That's good update on UCSB Economic Forecast Project, and like I said, or like we said, you can just Google UCSB Economic Forecast Project and track them down, and you can watch the changes to the website over the next 6 months to a year, and that'll be great.
Thanks.
So I'm flying back from Florida, reading the New York Times, August 13th, 2010, and titled "Taxes No Longer So Certain." And it says that taxes on corporate dividends are in line to soar next year in 2011, while those on long-term capital gains will rise, but less abruptly. Virtually everyone would pay higher income taxes if the law is not changed.
Right.
And to follow this one part up, and then I'll let you comment, virtually no one, save for Alan Greenspan, a former chairman of the Federal Reserve. You know, why would they just say a former? You know, it's like he's the former. You know, like no one knows who Alan Greenspan is.
Right, right.
Thinks it would be a good idea. So no one but Alan Greenspan thinks it would be a good idea to let the current law stand.
Right.
Mr. Greenspan says he's worried about budget deficits, while other economists are worried about choking off growth.
Right.
So what's your overview and take on this?
Well, Greenspan makes a good point. I think that, you know, basically we know what happens in economics. What happens in economics, if you make the price of something higher, people buy less of it. You know, that's just the law of demand. And that one's hard to break. And so basically if what you're going to do is, if you know that your tax liability is going to rise next year, you're going to make decisions this year to counteract that. And you know, so what's happening in the government now is, you know, distorting people's decisions to either, you know, buy or sell homes, to invest in machinery or in corporations, et cetera. And so, you know, basically what the idea is behind this law, it passed back in 2001, where we had, a big reduction in taxes. So I think, do you remember the name of the exact law? I think it was... Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001.
Oh, that's on everyone's tip of the tongue there.
Yeah, right. So that was the Bush tax cut, and you know, basically what they did was they put a sunset clause in there because this is all political rather than economics, by the way. And it was basically there's a law that I think it's in through the Senate that they can pass these kinds of things if it has a sunset clause with fewer votes, something like that. But anyway, so what happened was taxes were reduced. You know, basically in 2010, you know, there's no estate tax, for example. And if you look at the as you mentioned earlier, the tax rate on corporate dividends, which is now about 15%, it could go up as high to 40% starting next year.
Oh.
Yeah. So when you look at those kinds of things, you realize that people are going to make lots of decisions today. And I think there's been some, you know, tongue-in-cheek articles about, you know, if you have an old relative, you know, maybe people could pull the plug early. That's what they're worried about. Because on these estate taxes, they're going to go back up to, 50% or something. So,
But that's a separate issue when you just mentioned the cap. What would go from 20 to as high as 40?
That's the tax rate on corporate dividends.
On corporate dividends. So that doesn't affect someone's capital gains on their house or their tax or on their stocks?
No, not that part. That tax is going to go from something like only 15 to 20% or something in that ballpark.
Yeah, but, which is a 33% increase.
Exactly. No, these aren't small changes. And so we know that, you know, that certainly will distort people's decisions. And, you know, a lot of people go back and they say, well, look, you know, there's been times in the past where you look at when we had high taxes and we had high growth, and there were times when we had low taxes and low growth. And, you know, what I think people don't really understand about these kinds of issues is, you know, as an economist, you want to start out with the belief that people make rational, intelligent decisions. And so, you know, part of this whole tax game is the difference between whether you think it's a permanent tax increase or a temporary tax increase. So if you think it's a permanent tax increase, you know, that's going to have a very large effect on your wealth over time. A temporary tax cut may not have much of an effect on your wealth in the long run. So there are going to be very, very different decisions, you know, based on whether you believe the tax cut is permanent or temporary. And I think the problem in, you know, Washington now is that you know, they're not sending out very clear signals as to what people should be thinking about in terms of tax policy for the future. And that's the thing that's a bit disturbing, that, you know, and it's this kind of uncertainty that I think has prevented firms from investing and individuals from consuming. I mean, firms and corporations now are standing on huge sitting on huge stockpiles of cash. They're just not investing. And I think it's, you know, part of this uncertainty surrounding both taxes from this increase in, that we're going to see in 2011, as well as, you know, how do firms know how much the Obama health care policy is going to cost in terms of tax. So, you know, I think there's lots of issues out there not yet resolved, and, you know, it would be worthwhile to get them resolved soon.
Talking with Peter Rupert, economist at UCSB and director of the UCSB Economic Forecast Project, speaking of the health care, I did get an explanation of benefits from Blue Shield of California. And I have met $16 of my $4,000 annual deductible for 2010, so I'm well on my way.
There you go.
Something
you did raise earlier was, you're right that, you know, and what I meant by distorting people's decisions, you know, if you're going to see this rise in capital gains, which is set to occur, that, and by the way, you know, the step-up basis is also going to be changing. Are you familiar with that?
Well, I am. Yeah. Before we, and I wanted to talk about the step-up basis because I have a client whose relative died December 31st, 2009.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, oh, don't you wish she would have died in 2010? Because as you mentioned, that's the kind of the best year to die, people have been saying.
Right.
But he actually explained some issues and is related to the step-up basis that made him glad that she died in 2009 because they didn't have to inherit the house that was bought for, you know, $50,000. It's now worth $1 million.
Exactly.
You know, so they don't have to pay that gain. So I guess if you, it was like $3.5, $4, or $5 million, you know, if you're in that bracket, you were better off dying in 2009. But if it's like $10, $20 million, you may be better off dying in 2010.
No, that's exactly right.
But it really kind of screws over the small guy who might have just had $1 million or $2 million. It's that's the irony, is people always think that these estate taxes are only benefiting the rich, and they probably do primarily, but it really kind of screws over the small guy.
But
I wanted to go back before we go into that whole thing about what could happen and how they'll handle that inheritance tax. And it's always interesting that even people who will never have multi-millions of dollars and will never pay 50% on $10 million at the death tax, they call it, no one seems to like that. It just seems so unfair that you pay taxes on all your money your whole life, and then when you die, you don't either get it, you know, you don't get to give it away. You got to give away half of it back to the... But anyway, what you mentioned earlier was about the... we talked about the fifth capital gain. Let's say a guy's selling his house, so he pays 15% on the gain versus next year it might be 20%. Or if he has some... So I can understand how people, individuals, can handle that. And even in this article, it mentioned that if you have a stock, some stocks that have gains, you can sell them immediately this year, pay your gain, which could only be 15%, not 20% next year, and then you can buy them right back.
Correct.
Which was an interesting observation, because you cannot do that immediately, buy them back, if you have a loss.
Right.
So
that's right.
So I kind of understand the individual a little bit, but when you talk about the corporate tax, and a lot of people will say, the corporations, we don't care about them. You go from 15 or 20 to 40%. So what are they, how are they going to respond? Because a lot of people believe corporations are, of course, the engine running, you know, employment.
Right.
How do they respond? What's the pros and cons of not raising the taxes to them?
Well, right. So, you know, basically, you know, given what they see at this point in time, they're going to accelerate their their dividend payouts for sure. You know, stuff they're going to pay out in 2011, they're going to figure out ways to pay it in 2010 to help their investors. You know, but what it means for the long run is that, you know, they're going to have a harder time, you know, getting money. And, you know, basically if you know that the dividends you're going to be receiving are taxed at 40% rather than 15%, you know, you're going to think twice about, you know, where it is you're going to invest your dollars. So, you know, I don't think this is a time to, you know, to start messing around with those kinds of taxes in this current environment. And, you know, basically, like I said earlier, you know, what's best for the government and for the economy as a whole is to think about a coherent long-term plan so that people can, not have to worry about, next year is a bad year for me to sell my house. I want to do it this year, and because tax policy changes, and those kinds of things. I think it's bad for the environment.
I agree. Making decisions under duress rather than what might be best for the family, and I agree. So it's interesting, though, you started out the conversation talking with Peter Rupert, UCSB Economic Forecast Director. He's an economist, formerly with the Federal Reserve Bank in Ohio. And it just seems so political, like you said, and so then one of the article says, well, maybe they'll extend it just for 2 years to avoid maybe saving, because some Democrats, a majority of Republicans, want to see these tax savings continued.
Right.
But so is this political of well, so if enough Democrats are against this, then maybe they'll lose out in these midterm elections. So it becomes so political. Whereas a guy like Alan Greenspan, he's technically apolitical. He was appointed by a Republican, but kept on by Clinton.
Right.
So, and they had some interesting things about the Clinton administration in the 90s, where things went very well, and they didn't have big tax cuts. This guy who wrote this column clearly seemed to be more of a Democrat trying to push. Did you? I don't know if you got that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But there's got to be some truth. I mean, there's always some truth on both sides. So
there is truth on both sides. But, again, one of the big issues is, so if you go back over, tax policy over the last 10, 15 years, we do see times when there were tax rebates to individuals, just 2 years ago. And, the question is, if you go back and look at all those things, sometimes people spend out of that. Sometimes they save it. It all depends, like I said, on, sort of whether they view it as a temporary or permanent change. And so, here's the example. And the example is that if you know that today you got a $1,000 check from the government for a tax rebate, but they're not going to do anything about spending in the future, and there's going to be a bigger deficit, and you're going to have to pay $1,000 2 years from now to pay for the deficit, you're just going to save that money. You're not going to be spending it. You're going to think rationally and say, hey, I know what's going to happen. They're giving me money back now, but unless things change, they're going to have to tax me later anyway for their spending. So, people do make those calculations, I think. And, the other part of that is, about the relationship between taxes and deficits. It goes back to what's known as this thing called the Laffer curve. And that just basically says, if there's a point at which if you keep increasing taxes, tax revenue is going to fall. And you can do this at the extremes, which makes it really easy to think about. If you think about tax revenue of the government, suppose the tax rate is zero. Well, the government gets no revenue. Suppose the tax rate is 100%. Well, the government would get no revenue either because no one would work because the government would take all their money. So somewhere in between, as taxes rise, tax revenue increases. But at some point, as taxes rise, there's a decrease in tax revenue. So, there's arguments on both sides of that where we are in what's called the Laffer curve to see if we increase taxes, does tax revenue rise or fall? So, what Greenspan, I think, is saying is that, look, if what you're doing is, if you're going to be keeping taxes cut and we don't have enough revenue, then all the expenditures are going to be deficit financed, which is going to hurt other parts of the economy. So, he's complaining that, again, because there's no coherent plan, that if these tax cuts remain and we don't have enough revenue, then it's going to be deficit financed. And I believe in that article he said he was worried about a run on treasuries. So,
and this is called, I like your little example, it's called a Laffer curve?
Laffer curve, L-A-F-F-E-R.
L-A-F-F-E-R. Nothing to do with like laughing at it. The Laffer curve.
Some people do, but that comes from Arthur Laffer.
I like that. It's a very simple explanation. You know what? We're running out of time, but next time you come on, I'd like to talk to you about the flat tax because that's a whole other possible alternative. And
sure.
We're just out of time. But actually, yes or no? Is that something you would support, good or bad?
I like the basis of something like a consumption or a flat tax.
Okay.
I do.
Well,
for sure.
Well, Peter Rupert, UCSB Economic Forecast Director. Again, Google UCSB Economic Forecast. He's got a lot of good changes that he's trying to implement to the website and make it more user-friendly for the tri-counties. And we appreciate you coming on, Peter. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Okay, have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com, 452-2428, 452-CHAT. We'll take a break and come back for a short segment. Fourth segment, weekly multiple listing sales update. Next segment, see if we have time to talk about a homeowner who's foreclosed upon. Can they, if there's a second held on the property, can they get sued after they lose their house? And secondhand smoke, but what about cigarettes killing aphids on your plants? That's a follow-up from last week's interview with Owen Dell. A caller called in with a tip of the week, home maintenance tip of the week on how to kill aphids. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.